was white. Okay. Yes, sir. Good. Okay, today, this year, we're going to do something different. We're going to, because Shmuel made the comment about it, that we haven't done much ever in Sefer Dvarim. So we have, I think, 4 weeks in Elul, so we can tackle some of the Parshiot in Sefer Dvarim. And this week is Parsha Shoftim. So we're going to discuss, hopefully, two topics. For sure, one topic. I'm not sure how much time we're going to have. We're going to start with the last topic of the Parsha, and that is the Parsha of the Egla Arufa. The Egla Arufa means the calf whose neck gets broken. So let's just go through the initial psukim in source number one, just to get ourselves comfortable with the story, and then we'll analyze this. It says, "Ki yimotzei chalal ba'adama," if you will find a murdered person on the ground, "asher Hashem alokecha nosein lecha l'rishta," in the land that Hashem is giving you as an inheritance, "nofel basada," he has fallen in the field, "lo noda mihiko," we don't know who killed him. It's a crime. We don't know who the criminal is, who the murderer is. V'yatzu zekeinecha v'shoftecha, and the elders and the judges will come out. Umaratu el haharim, they measure the distance of the corpse to the nearest cities. Asher svivos hachalol, that's around the corpse. V'hoyoha ira krova el hachalol, and then when they determine which city is closer to the corpse, then the elders of that city require atonement, and they bring a calf. And there's a whole story of what goes on, but the point we're interested in is the next point. And they decapitate the neck of the calf in the valley. Okay? You break its neck. V'nogshu ha-kohan ibn Levi, then the priests, the sons of Levi, they come forward. V'chol ziknei ha-yirahu ha-krovim el-achalol, and all the elders of the city that's closest to the corpse, yirchatsu es yedeyam ala egla rufa banachal, they wash their hands in the valley over the egla rufa. V'anu v'amran, they respond and say, yodeinu lo shavchu es adam hazeh, our hands have not spilled this blood, v'einenu loron, ours didn't see. Kaper la'amcha Yisrael asher podis Hashem. Bring atonement to your nation Israel, which you have saved. V'altitein dam naki bekerav amecha Yisrael nechaper lahem dam. Do not place innocent blood in the midst of your people Israel. And then finally, then the blood shall be atoned for them. So therefore, the basic idea is there's a murder that happened somewhere near a city. We don't take someone's murder lightly. Many, many judges from Yerushalayim come to make a big deal about it. They try to find out who the murderer is, but if they cannot find who the murderer is, it seems that the elders of the city have to assume some responsibility, and they take this animal and kill it as some form of kapara. Yes, sir.
How do they always assume it's a murder? What if it was just an unfortunate accident?
No, well, you could see that he has
blood on him.
Blood dripping out from a wound that would come from a sword. We're talking about a murder. We're talking about a murder.
No, but someone could die by themselves.
I understand that, but we're not talking about an accident. We're talking about where it's clear this fellow was murdered.
Okay, no, I'm just asking. And then,
well, there's no murder. Accidents can happen anywhere. But it's clear there was, this fellow has been murdered, and we don't know who killed him. Now, this is one of the 613 mitzvahs that we do not do nowadays. And therefore, it is our obligation to try to figure out what is the practical benefits of this mitzvah and its application nowadays for this. On a very simple level, you could say that, well, listen, everybody, you have to make sure that cities are safe. You have to make sure there are policemen and things are safe, and there is a certain responsibility for a city to make sure that there aren't murders. And that's certainly true on a simple level. But in terms of our personal avodas Hashem, what is it that we can learn from this? That's what we want to analyze for tonight. And in order to do that, we're going to share with you some of the beautiful teachings of the Shvilei Pinchas, Rav Pinchas Friedman, of a shmuz he gave in the year Tav Shin Ayin Gimel. And if we have time, we'll add a little bit from another shir he gave, if time allows.
So, Rabbi,
yes, sir. So,
why don't they do Shochet the Kaf? Why break?
Because it's not in the Beis Hamikdash.
And it's not.
It's not a status of Kachim. It's not sanctified animals. It's not an animal that was sanctified.
This is an embarrassment.
And
this is something that you don't forget.
And it's something that has to be done locally. Just like you have other things, like the Para Aduma. Right. Is also not shechted in the Beis HaMikdash. It's done outside the Beis HaMikdash. A lot of it is to draw a lot of attention to what's going on. You're trying to create a lot of attention, so perhaps we could find the murder victim. And we want the people of this city to be aware of what's happening. They need atonement. And we can't very well schlep the whole city to Yerushalayim. So therefore, it's not meant as a offering, so to speak, in terms of kachim, of sanctified animals. It's meant to bring some form of atonement. But and of course, it is a good question, the uniqueness of how it is killed. Yeah. And therefore, we will answer that in the course of the class. We'll be answering the course of the class. Okay, so the best way we can understand this is where else in the Torah, not direct in the Torah, but from Chazal, is there a mentioning of the Egla Arufa? This calf that gets its neck broken. Anywhere you came
Yosef.
Through it. Yosef, and what?
Yeah, when they came with the coat, with the blood. The brother says,
You were close, but that was a sheep.
Oh, okay.
It was a sheep.
A sheep, right.
Not a calf.
Okay,
not a calf, but you were close. Okay. You were close, Esther. Yosef's right. You got the right guy, but the wrong story.
Okay.
So you're closer than anybody else. So let's take a look at the next source. When Yaakov is informed by his sons that Yosef is still alive, in source number 2. Vayagidu lo lemor, and they said to him, "Oh, Yosef chai, Yosef still alive. Who Moshe becholers Mitzrayim, and he is the ruler over all the land of Egypt. Vayofak libo, and his heart rejected the idea. Kilo hamina, he couldn't believe them. Vayadabru av el kol divrei Yosef shirbelim, they told over all the words that Yosef said to them. But then." Vayaris ha'agalot asher shalach Yosef laseiso. So remember, when Yosef sent the brothers back, he sent these calves in wagons. So when Yaakov saw the calves that are meant to carry him back to Egypt, vatechiruach Yaakov aviyam, the spirit of Yaakov returned. Why did the spirit of Yaakov return? Let's look at the third source in the Rashi. Because Siman Masar Lahem, Yosef sent a sign. But Mahaya Osei Kishapirish Mimenu, what was Yosef learning with his father when he separated from him? When his father walked him out of Chevron to send him away to see the brothers, what were they learning? They're learning the Parshas Egla Arufa. They're learning the story of the calf whose neck is broken. Zer Shenemar, that's what the Torah is hinting to. It says, Vayar et ha'galot, asher sholach Yosef. So he saw the wagons, the calves, that Yosef had sent. That is the hint to that. Okay? Vatechi ruach Yaakov, and Yaakov's spirit was revived. Why? Because shor solov shechina shepir simimena, the shechina that had left him,
came back.
So he remembered the Egla Arufa. And what was this story when they separated? Let's move on to the fourth source, when it exactly happened. Vayomer Yisrael Yosef, and Yaakov said to Yosef, Halo achicha roim b'shchem, aren't your brothers shepherding in Shechem, far away? L'cha go v'shalachacha lema, I will send you to them. Vayomer lo, and he says, Hineni, here I am. Vayomer lo, and he says, Lech no, please go, Re'ei Shalom Achicha, see the peace of your brothers, Vashlom Atzon and the sheep, Vashivendom, and return to me a word. What it's all about. Okay. So let's try to ask a couple questions, try to understand what's going on over here. So try to imagine your mind, Yaakov is escorting Yosef out of Hebron to see his brothers. Now this is a most unusual thing. This very Yaakov, who we know at the end of his life, was able to bless his 12 sons before he died. He saw with the divine spirit, with Ruach HaKodesh, everything that's going to happen in the future until Mashiach came. And right now, he senses that he has to send Yosef to find out his brothers, right? So that's very unusual that he is escorting him for the last time. He's going to see him for 20 years. And we find Yosef's incredible obedience, although Yosef knows his brothers hate his guts, mm-hmm. and his father tells him to go. He could very well have said, I'm not going, it's too dangerous. But no, he's willing to go. Okay. And now all of a sudden, Yaakov decides to teach him the laws of the Egla Rufa. So the question is, why of all the laws to teach him? Is he teaching him the law of Egla Rufa? Okay, you're supposed to learn Torah. You don't, when two people leave each other, they leave each other with a word of Torah. So the question is, if we could just tell him, close the door. See, I see every time people leave the door open. Just watching money go out the door. Just watching money go out the door. Anyway, why teach him the laws of the Egla Rufa? You teach him the laws of Kibbutz Avaim. You could teach him the laws of... Yeah, just close it.
Another one.
Right? The laws of Ahavtal Reacha Kamocha, you can teach him. Why Egla Rufa, A? And B, so why when Yaakov hears that Yosef is bringing back the calves, that he remembered the laws of Egla Rufa, why does that revive his soul? So what's that all about? So now we're going to go and tell you a very important teaching from the Baal Shem Tov. And it's a very fundamental point in Hashkachas Hashem and Dveikus Bashem. So we'll take this slowly. It's a very, very important idea. And we're looking at source number 6. It's found, brought down in the name of the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, who was the premier student of the Baal Shem Tov. It's going on a pasuk in source 5, a famous pasuk at the end of Sefer Dvarim. When the Jews are going to be bad, it says, "Vanochi haster astir panai bayomahu," and I will surely hide my face on that day. I'll call hara asher asah because of all the evil they have committed. Ki fana el Elohim acherim, because they turn to other idols. And the obvious question is, what's the double expression of haster astir? I will surely hide. Just say, "Anochi astir." So what's this haster astir going on over here? So the Baal Shem Tov explains the following. Now I just gave you a couple lines over there, but I'm going to read it in. Look at, paraphrase it inside my sefer. It has the full text, and you've got the exact little text over here. So the Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, he says from his Rebbe, he says, I heard from a Rebbe that if a person clearly knows with emuna shlema, with complete belief, that all the hiding that happens, it's all coming from Hashem. In other words, when things are going bad in life, and superficially it looks like Hashem's hiding from you, he's not there. But if a person believes completely that the truth is Hashem is not hiding from him, that Hashem is absolutely, even though it looks terrible, terrible things are happening to you now. And now, where is Hashem? But if you fully believe that Hashem is there, and when the person knows and believes that every action, small or big, it all comes from Hashem, immediately at that point, all the evil that is apparently coming to him is going to go away. And will be revealed the divine light instead. In other words, you're in a bad situation. It looks really bad. Whatever the situation is, that's a very bad situation. Tempted to say, oh, I guess Hashem's hiding himself from me. He doesn't care about me. But if you say, no, I believe Hashem is 100% here, just like he's been in my good times. And I'm 100% clear Hashem is doing all this. At that point, that emunah causes that the evil that is happening or is going to happen will leave. And the light of Hashem is going to shine. And that's basically what I put in the English here. So long as a Jew believes wholeheartedly that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is with him, even during times of extreme concealment, it's impossible for anything bad to befall him. That's a strong statement. Now, I'm going to add on a little bit more from inside. But sometimes, but the Pasuk says, Vanochi hastir astir. So what's the Pasuk mean with the double expression? So he's saying that I'm concealing my concealment. In other words, I'm behaving in a way that I'm concealed, and the person's looking at it, and he really believes that Hashem is concealed. In other words, there's an aspect of I am revealed in the concealment, and there's an aspect of I'm concealed in the concealment. In other words, the matzav looks like, on the surface, hester panim, there's concealment. But the person's like, well, it just looks that way, but I know Hashem's there the whole way. But what if it looks bad, and it says, and I think Hashem's just not here? That's the double expression. Okay, hastir, astir. That the situation looks like I'm not there, and the person himself doesn't think I'm here. And he doesn't sense any life and any light, and he thinks that Hashem forgot about him. You know why that's so? Because this person has turned to other idols. He has lost his emunah and bitachon, and that's when a person can get punished. In other words, but as long as a person is clinging with his complete emunah to Hashem, nothing bad can happen to him. Rather, love and affection happens. Big, big yesod of the Baal Shem Tov. So let's recap this. Person is in the midst of a very bad situation. So what's going to happen? So the Baal Shem Tov said, if the person clearly says this is all the Yad Hashem, and Hashem, you may think that I think you're hiding, but you're not. I know you're exactly there, and everything you're doing is for the best, and you remain close to Hashem, nothing bad's going to happen to you. But when the person thinks that Hashem's left, that's the Pasuk Anochi Hastir Astir, and then all kinds of terrible things are going to happen to him. That's a fascinating concept. You may wonder, where does the Baal Shem Tov get this idea from? Well, it would appear he didn't get it by himself, but he's just based on, believe it or not, a Rambam. A Rambam, although it's a very Hasidic idea, but the Rambam, who people mistakenly look at as the rationalist, we're going to see in a minute the Rambam in the Mora Nevuchim in source number 7. He's going to tell us by introducing and saying, I was revealed to me a wondrous idea, and this wondrous idea will remove all doubts and will reveal fundamentals of Yiddishkeit. He said, I'm going to tell you a big, big idea, says the Rambam. Okay? And what is this? He says, he talks about the idea of the Hashkachas Hashem. And he says, you know, we have all kinds of people. Let's read inside. He says, the complete person, the person's an Orem HaSholem, will always have Hashem in mind. Every moment, he's clinging to Hashem all the time. Mm-hmm. Now, someone who is really, really close to Hashem, as a result, he will always be supervised from above. Hashem's always keeping an eagle eye on him. He's watching anything that's going to happen. And therefore, he will be protected. On the other hand, this same person, when he is engrossed in other matters and forgets of Hashem, temporarily, Hashem's supervision will be absent temporarily as well. Now, he says, it will not be entirely absent, as it would be from someone who does not believe in or comprehends Hashem's supervision at all. For this person does believe in Hashem's hashgacha, but his divine supervision at that moment will only be diminished. So what's he saying? There's some people who don't really think about Hashem ever at all. They either don't believe that Hashem's involved, or they just don't think about Hashem. Those people, Hashem does not supervise them. If you're not thinking of Hashem all the time, and you're not walking with Hashem, so Hashem says, fine, go with who you want to go with, and I got nothing to do with you. And if a truck runs you over, it runs you over. You know, that's the luck of the draw. But a person who really is basically a tzaddik, a person who really he thinks about Hashem all the time, he's doing everything based on what he thinks Hashem wants, nothing, Hashem is constantly watching that guy. And even if he has a temporary lapse, things got very hectic, and for a few moments he's forgetting, then Hashem's going to move away a little bit, but not so much, because after all, this guy generally is thinking about Hashem, but it will move away a little bit. Okay? But it's diminished. Okay? And he compares it, for example, to a sofer, a scribe, when he's not writing. When a scribe is writing, he's writing. So what do you call a scribe when he's not writing? Well, it's not like he doesn't believe in writing a Sefer Torah, but right now he's not writing a Sefer Torah. Okay, fine. Then the Rambam concludes after dot, dot, dot. He says, well, appear to me, when you find that bad things happen in the world, whether it is to prophets or chassidim hashlemim, people who are complete chassidim, and bad things happen to them, that's only when they have those temporary lapses and they forget about Hashem. And depending on how much the forgetfulness is, that's how bad it will be. Okay? And then hashkacha will be constant with a person if he is always making those efforts to be close to Hashem. And that's what the last part says. The magnitude of the negative event is directly related to the length of time and the degree to which he forgot Hashem's hashkach. Wow. Now, where do you think the Rambam got all this from? Well, many sources, but just look at 8 and 9 very quickly. A few weeks ago I read, V'atem adveikim b'Hashem elokeichem chayim kochem hayom, and you are attached to Hashem, your God, you are all alive today. Pasuk says it clear. If you're attached to Hashem, you're alive. Or as David HaMelech said in Source 9, Gam kielech begeitz almoves, even as I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, lo ira ra, I don't fear any evil, kiatan, because you are with me. So this is the big golden rule that the Baal Shem Tov, getting it from the Rambam, who gets it from the Psukim, a person, and remember I've said many times already, Sefer Dvarim is the Sefer of Chassidus. It's the Sefer of the person wanting to go beyond the letter of the law. The person wants to be with Hashem. So many times in Sefer Dvarim, it talks about the concept of dveikus, of clinging to Hashem. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if a person really has Hashem on his lips all the time, and he's always thinking of Hashem, he always wants to do Hashem, every time he moves a muscle, he thinks, what does Hashem want me to do at this time? And he mamish feels like he's walking hand in hand with Hashem. They're all saying, Hashem is there and watching you, and nothing bad's going to happen to you. And if you have a temporary lapse, then a temporary slip. Many, many stories about this. Many stories with the Briskarov and his son when they were running away from the Germans. And they both had to go with fake passports on a train. And the father said to his son, he says, as we're got now to take this dangerous trip, remember this and only think of this. Ein od milvado. There's nothing else but Hashem. That's the only being that exists in front of you. Everything else is just a mirage. And when they got on the train, now they're very concerned because the Germans were checking for people with false papers. And they catch you, boom, you go right to the concentration camp. So him and his son, and they're thinking of Einod Movado, they go, Einod Movado. And then the German, one of the ticket guys, SS guys, gets on a train and starts looking. And the father is just thinking Einod Movado. But the son, for a brief moment, gave a little credence to that Nazi. And all of a sudden, the Nazi turns and starts going to them. And then the son just got himself back and just thought, Eino Movado, and he just walked right past them. There's all kinds of stories, not with Hasidic rebbes. I could tell some Hasidic because that's a Hasidic rebbe. I'm talking about Litvaks. The stories that people testify with the Brisker Rav, he was in a room with a student, and he said, you just think of Hashem Ein Od Movado. And the Germans came into the room. They came into the room and they acted as if they didn't see them. They were there, but they didn't see them. Okay, so this is what Ein Od Movado means. If you really believe in Hashem, there's nothing can happen. Or the other famous story I said, I think it was from Rav Chaim Volozhin. I believe so. I could be wrong, but I think so. Where this fellow runs to him and saying, Rebbe, I'm finished. The Russians are coming. They're checking everybody's house. They're looking for contraband. And they're coming. They're only a few houses away from my house. And my house, my basement's full of contraband. They're going to send me away to the gulag. I'll never see me again. He's mamish. He's losing it. So Chaim sits him down and says, you have to know and remember, Ein Od Movado. There's no one can hurt you. It's not possible. The guy says, I know, but they're coming and they're going to... And Reb Chaim has spent like an hour or two to settle him down and to get him into that mindset. And it took him a long, long time to show him, to understand that Hashem is totally in charge and nothing else in charge, even though it looks the opposite. He finally settled him down. A couple hours later, the guy comes back. Rebbe, it was a miracle. He says, what happened? Well, what happened was, after you told me that, a few minutes later, they had come and they came to my house. And they looked at the clock. It's lunchtime. So what good Russian officer doesn't eat lunch? So what do? They put a mark an X on my door. And I say, we'll be back. So they go for lunch. And they take an extended lunch with vodka break. Okay. For a few hours. And then they come staggering back. And they come to the door with the X. He says, okay, let's check the house. The guy says, no. This house we did already, because that's why we put an X on it. Let's go to the next house. And that's it. So, you see, that's what it is. So it's not just the Baal Shem Tov. It's not just a Hasidic fort. It's not just the Rambam. It's not just the Torah. Even the Litvaks hold from this. Very important, Yisod, that you have to realize that if a person, the closer you're connected to Hashem, the closer Hashem is connected to you, nothing wrong can happen to you, period. Now, this is not an easy level to achieve, and you can't fool anybody. You can't say, oh, me and Hashem were like this. You know, you can't say that if you don't do everything Hashem asks you to do. You know, if Hashem asks you to do certain mitzvahs and you don't do certain mitzvahs, what are you telling me you're walking with Hashem? You know, it's easy to say, I believe in Hashem, I'm close to Hashem and all these things, but you don't even listen to what he says. Or, you're easy to say you believe, but then the first time something is scary, you all of a sudden get nervous. So it's got to be true. But if it's indeed true, nothing can happen to you. Okay, with this, you sewed down. Let's go a step further and work this through. Let's go to source number 10. The famous story with Yaakov before he meets Esav. Before he meets Esav, he hides his family on the other side of the Yabok. And then we are told in source 10, Vayivoser Yaakov levado vayeyavek ish imo adalos hashachar. Yaakov remained alone by himself, and a man started to fight with him until the sun rose. And this was the angel of Esav, went to fight Yaakov spiritually. Vayar ki lo yochalo, the angel saw he couldn't overpower him. Vayiga bakaf yerecho, he hits him in the thigh area. Fataka kaf yerech Yaakov, he dislodged the thigh bone. Beavkom was wrestling with him. Vayomer, the angel says, shalcheni ki lo hashachar, let me go, the sun has risen. Vayomer lo hashalecha, I'm not going to let you go till you bless me. Vayomer lo, he says, mashemecha, what's your name? Vayomer Yaakov, says, my name's Yaakov. Vayomer, he says, is the blessing. Lo Yaakov Yeomero Shemech. Your name should no longer be called Yaakov. Ti'im Yisrael, but it should be Yisrael. Why? Ki Sharisa im Elokim v'manashim v'tuchal. For you have Sharisa, you have been victorious with the divine and with man. Which means you're victorious over Malach, you're victorious over Lavan, you're victorious. Sharisa, like a sar, like an officer, a victory man. So asks the Mephorshim two very important questions. Number one, first question, why was Yaakov behind? Why was he alone? Why was he alone? So Rashi tells us in Source 11, he forgot some jugs.
Mugs.
He forgot a few jugs. Rashi says, Shachach pachim ketanim v'chazer aleim. So it seems, by the way the pasuk is juxtaposed, it says like this, Yaakov's alone. Why? Because he forgot jugs. Now the malach goes for him. It would seem that because he was going after jugs, the malach went after him. Now that seems kind of odd, because the Malach is the Malach of Esav, who eternally hates Yaakov and doesn't need an excuse. So why do we have to be told he went back for small jugs? Just say, he just went after him. The Malach went after him. That's it. He's his arch rival. He wants to knock him off. What do I care that he went for little jugs? A. B. What does he call his name? What does he call his name? Yisrael. Why does he call him Yisrael? He should have called him Sharisa. He says, Ki, I'm going to call, Ki Sharisa im Elokim. So call him Sharisa. Sharisa. All right? Why call him Yisrael? Okay. So, and one other little interesting point, if we look at the Arizal in source number 12, he says an interesting thing. He says the name Yaakov, what does Yaakov mean? It comes from the word Ekev, which means heel. That's referring to Yaakov when he's not on such a high level. But the word Yisrael, look in source 12, Yisrael is made up of the letters Li Rosh. You change the letters, Li Rosh. It's my head. Well, you also have Yashar, but he's using a different one. This is another way of looking at it. Li Rosh. So what does it mean, Li Rosh? What does Li Rosh mean? So he brings from the Medrash, the Psikta Rabba, and the Pasuk and Parshas Kisisa. Kisisa es Rosh B'nai Yisrael. When you lift up the heads of the children of Israel. So the question is, why does it have to have the word Rosh? It could just say Kisisa es B'nai Yisrael when you count the Jews. Kisisa B'nai Yisrael ain't Ksivkan. It doesn't say Kisisa B'nai Yisrael. It says Rosh B'nai Yisrael. So what does Rosh mean? So the Medrash says the Jews have no other head than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, there seems to be an idea of counting the heads, but counting the Jewish people with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which means to say, that the source of the life of a Jew is the fact that he's connected to Hashem, as we said, Vatem advegim Hashem Elokechem chayim kuchem hayom. So in other words, we're saying that the Jewish people have a head. And you know what our head is? Our head is Hashem. Just like it's a good idea to keep your head connected to your body. Because when your head is connected to your body, it takes care of your body. So our real head is Hashem. Hashem is our head. Meaning to say, you got a head, you got brains, and the brains tell you what to do. Well, we got brains. They're Hashem brains. That's the idea of Li Rosh. Yisrael means Li Rosh. Hashem is my head. That's what the Medrash is saying. And when you count the heads of the Jewish people, they really count when they're connected to the head, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, what the Arizal is telling us is that when Yaakov is called Yaakov and the expression of Akev, of the heel, it's because the heel is the lowest part of the body. So that's referencing a time when the Jewish people are on a pretty low level and not very much connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. And therefore Hashem, you know, may not be watching them so much. But the Rambam says, you know, if even you're a tzaddik, but if you forget a little bit of Hashem, Hashem forgets about you. And then you become like the Akev, the heel, and that's pretty low. On the other hand, the name Yisrael, which has the letters Li Ro, shows when the Jew is completely connected to Hashem. And that means that he's Dovik Tashem. And just like you know, Hinei lo yanum velo yishan shomer Yisrael, so Hashem is going to take care of him. So this is the incredible insight of Yisrael. A proper Jew always has Li Rosh, Hashem's my head. It means I'm totally connected to Hashem. So this is what's going on over here. The angel of Esav figured, wow, it's going to be hard for me to attack Yaakov. You know, Yaakov, he's always connected to Hashem. And as long as he's connected to Hashem, I can't touch him. But now that he sees that Yaakov's going back to get some jugs,
materials,
he figures, oh, he's now temporarily forgetting about Hashem.
Disconnected.
What's he worried about? These little jugs over here. Now's my chance. He's the tzaddik that the Ram talks about, but sometimes you forget a little bit. So he says, so now's my chance to let him have it. And he was expecting to totally knock him out. But what happens? Vayar kilo yocholo. He sees he's still not able to touch him. Which means what? He made a big mistake. The Malach made a mistake. He says, even when Yaakov is involved in doing the most mundane things, but what do Chazal say? Why did he go back for the jugs? So the rabbis explain, why does he go back? Because the tzaddikim are very careful not to steal. And therefore, they don't want to waste anything of Hashem's world. And if he has even a jug that belongs to him, it has to be used in the service of Hashem. And there's no such thing as leaving a jug behind. Not that he's a cheap Jew and he can't forgive losing a few dollars. But he understands, if Hashem gave me a jug, I have to use it in Avodas Hashem. And therefore, he's going back. Why? And at no point has he forgotten about Hashem. So now when the Malach sees this, he says, what kind of a blessing should I give him? He is the kind of fellow who is, at this point, has proven that he's Yisrael Li Rosh, that Yaakov is totally connected to Hashem at all times.
Yes.
Yaakov is the tzaddik that no matter what, no matter how scary the situation was, Esav's going to attack him tomorrow. He's trying to save his children. Better people would be much more terrified. And now he's going back to take care of the jugs because he's so careful not to waste anything of Hashem's world. So the angel now blesses him. He attacked him now because he thought he was most vulnerable. He found out he wasn't vulnerable. And now he's worthy of the blessing of Yisrael of Li Rosh, and he's always connected to Hashem. Okay. So far, so good. So now let's, with all this information, we can come back to our Egla Rufa now and start explaining things. But first you have to add one little more piece of information. The Gemara in Shabbos says like this, an interesting rule. Let's say you have a community and someone in the community suffers a terrible tragedy. How is the community supposed to react to it? The Gemara says, Echad nibnei chabura shemes, if someone from a chevra of friends dies, tidag kol hachabura kula, the whole group has to be afraid. Maybe one of us is next. Why? What is the Gemara saying? Don't think when somebody in your community dies that it's his problem, it's not your problem. But rather, if you were such good friends, Hashem wouldn't cause you guys to suffer unless there was something wrong with you guys too. So therefore, there's something wrong. There's some kind of blemish with everybody in the community. Now, what is the blemish? That's the worst blemish that we talked about based on the Baal Shem Tov and the Rambam and Reb Chaim Volosh and everything, is we were missing this connection to Hashem. They were saying a person who's totally connected to Hashem, nothing bad happens to him. So even if it's dangerous, nothing bad's going to happen to him. So how could something bad happen to someone in the Chabura? Must be that there's a lack of Dveikus to Hashem. People are not living that close to Hashem. Well, if that's the case, we all recall the Ramban that I mentioned a few months ago in Source 15, the whole reason why we bring a Korban. The whole reason we bring a Korban, basically, is to play out on the animal what should have happened to us. We discussed at great length that when you bring a Korban, there's thought, speech, and action. Okay, when a person behaves, it's through thought, speech, and action. When you bring a Korban, there's thinking and there's speech and there's action. And basically what the person is playing out on the animal, he's saying this should have played out on me and you should think about that. I did a certain sin. This animal is being killed. I should have been the one who's killed. And he thinks about that and he does tshuva for that and says, I got to behave better. And that's the whole reason of a Korban. So let's think about it, therefore. What's the reason for this Egla Arufa? Why are we told to bring some kind of a offering, although it's not a typical Korban? So why are we bringing the Egla Arufa? So if you look at the next source, the Medrash in Source 16 says that the Jews are known by 70 different names. And one of them is Egla. Mm-hmm. One of them is a calf. And he brings a pasuk in Hosea. One is a calf. What does that mean? Well, what calf are we talking about? It's hinting to the Egla Arufa. The Egla Arufa. And what happens to the Egla Arufa? The Egla Arufa's head is chopped off from his body. Now this Egla Arufa is supposed to bring kapara. So why are we chopping the head of a calf off of its body to show the rabbis and everyone in the community, why is it that a person in your community gets murdered? How does somebody get murdered like this? Meis echad min ha-chabura, tida kol ha-chabura kulaf. Somebody in your group dies, everyone has to be worried over here. So therefore, we have to bring some atonement, and they have to think through this process that just like this calf got its head chopped off, what was going on? What's going on is our heads were not connected to our bodies were not connected to the real head. Li Rosh HaKadosh Baruch Hu is my head. I wasn't thinking about my head. And therefore the Pasuk says, you go back to the first source. I bolded it. It says, Yadeinu lo shofchas adam hazev einenu lo ro. Our hands didn't spill his blood, our eyes didn't see. Kaper la'amcha Yisrael. Give atonement to your nation Israel. So the rabbis ask, Rashi brings down from Chazal in 17, what does it mean our hands didn't shed his blood? Do you think for a minute that they've killed him? They have to say, oh, we didn't kill him. Of course they didn't kill him. So Rashi says, but would it enter one's mind that the elders of the court are murderers? Rather, they declare, we ourselves did not see him and let him depart without food or escort. which would have indirectly caused his death, leaving this man to the elements and to robbers. Pashup shot is, you know, we didn't see the guy and say, oh, we're not going to help him. We didn't even know about the guy. But it could never be that a guy's walking by, we don't offer him a ride, don't offer him a drink, because that's what could cause him to die. We didn't do that. But we could say this not just physically, but what about spiritually? What is the job of a Beis Din? Yes, a Beis Din has a job on a physical level to make sure that strangers are accompanied, strangers are given a meal. Yes, that's part of it. But what is the real job of Beis Din? The real job of Beis Din is to keep everybody's bodies connected to Hashem's head. It's the job of the rabbis is to get the people in the community to be connected to Hashem at all times. That's the real job of the Rabbanim. Not just to render laws and all those other things, but it's to be role models and it's to teach people what it means to go with Hashem. Because that's the way you really protect the community. Certainly you do things on a physical level. You have policemen out and you have Hachnasas Orchim homes. Certainly on a physical level you have to do all those things. There's no question about it. But what they're saying is, you know, if somebody died, that means we really were not 100% on top of our game to make sure that all Jews felt connected to Hashem. There was a problem with the Yisrael was missing something of the Li Rosh was missing. And therefore we have to play out with this Egla Ruva where we chop its head off of its body to show that we've been walking around like literally a chicken without a head.
Mm-hmm.
A calf without a head. We came up with the expression, a calf without a head. The Goyim came up with a chicken without a head. In other words, you don't have a head. You know, this expression in Gemara, psik reisha v'lo yamut. If you cut off the head of a chicken, can it not die? It has to die. So a Jew does not have a head, does not have the connection to Hashem, is finished. So therefore, the Beis Din's job is how to teach people not to get hurt. And the best way not to get hurt is to be thinking about Hashem all the time. Oy vavoy, in so many other communities, not ours, where it's very, very difficult to have people going into shul and talking. I mean, the last thing you should do in a shul is to forget about Hashem. And you worry, then you wonder why calamities happen. Because people aren't connected to Hashem. This rule of the Baal Shem Tov. You got to keep with this. So this now is the message of the Egla Rufa. And this is the eternal message of the Egla Rufa. Every time we come to this parsha, we have to remember that it's the Rabbanim's job and our job is to always be Yisrael Li Rosh. And that I'm totally connected to Hashem. And that is what protects us more than anything else. You know, if bad things happen in the community, you know, it's not enough to say, okay, we're gonna say Tehillim, we're not gonna speak Lashon Hara. Those are all symptoms. The symptoms of what? Of people who don't feel connected to Hashem. If you're connected to Hashem and you believe Hashem is with you all the time, you wouldn't even think of saying Lashon Hara to anybody else. You wouldn't think of doing any Averos. That's the core to everything. And this is really why this is the first parsha we read in the month of Elul. We're engaged in tshuva, hopefully. Cheshbon HaNefesh. So what's the biggest Cheshbon HaNefesh? What's the first point of tshuva? Is, well, what are we supposed to be doing? We're supposed to be close to Hashem. If you're close to Hashem and He is Li Rosh, you're not going to do any Averos. You only do Averos if you're lacking that. That's the core. And that's what this parsha is coming to teach us over here. So this becomes the message for us, that we have to try our hardest to keep our bodies connected to the head, which is Hashem. And the more we're connected to Hashem, the more He's watching us, and the less we have to worry about anything else. Now, with this we can understand the great wisdom of Yosef and the wisdom of his father Yaakov. Why did Yaakov teach him the law of the Egla Rufa when he was leaving him? Because he knew he was sending Yosef in a dangerous place. You don't think he knew he was sending his son to a dangerous place? He knew. But he says, so what? The Lozat Sing is a dangerous place for a tzaddik. Yosef has learned all the Torah from me. Yaakov himself was the one who went back for the little jugs. He went back for the jugs, and at the end of the day, nothing happened to him. Even though the Malach had him in his
ambushed. But he couldn't do anything. And he got a bracha out of all that. Because Yaakov knew that even I'm involved in the smallest things, Hashem's with me at all times. Even in the middle of the night, Hashem's with me at all times, and he can't get touched. And therefore people say, well, why in the world is Yaakov so stupid? Why is he sending Yosef to his brothers who want to kill him? The answer is, he's got nothing to worry about. There's no such a thing. Yosef's followed me. I've taught him all my Torah, and now the last message is the Egla Rufa. Keep Hashem's head on your shoulders. And that's what Yosef did. Now, you're going to say, well, it didn't work out so well, did it? Well, sure, it worked out well, because they didn't kill him. Not only that, when they threw him in the pit and there were poisonous snakes and scorpions, they didn't touch him. And not only that, but his going down to Egypt wasn't bad at all. It saved all the brothers.
Of course.
So Yaakov knew what he was doing. He wasn't putting out. Yes, he probably should not have sent a lower type of person out on such a mission.
Yeah, the hardest place to keep his head was in Egypt.
Right? But I'm saying, yeah, if he had a son not on Yosef's level, he probably would not have sent him. But since he knew who he was dealing with, Yosef at Tzaddik, so then he says, well, what's the big deal? So his brothers hate him. So they can't touch him. And that's the whole point of teaching the Egla Rufa. And therefore, when 22 years pass, and Yosef has to let his father know that he's alive, but alive isn't enough for Yaakov. He has to know, does he have Hashem's head on his shoulder or not? If he's alive in Egypt, doesn't help Yaakov at all. If he's not alive, it's not. If he's not connected to Hashem, as far as I'm concerned, he's not my son.
So
therefore, he sends the calves, says, Abba, I never forgot the lesson. Especially when the wife of Potiphar threw every Yetzirah at him. But what happens? Ro ziv dukiono shalaviv. He saw a picture of his father. And his father represented Yisrael. That Yesh Li Rosh. I have a head. And Yosef, remember, there's Hashem over here. Even in Egypt, Hashem over here. And Hashem is with me just like everyone else. And even if I'm not going to listen to her and she's going to want to threaten to put me in, it doesn't matter. And that's what Yosef did the whole time he was in Egypt. He always says, with Hashem's help, Amir Hashem. He always carried Hashem. And at the end of the day, nothing happened to him. So this becomes the message of this parsha of the Egla Rufa, that we have to keep Hashem very much. And this is the message that's playing out so many times in Sefer Dvarim, so many times, to be davuk b'Hashem. So this is an exquisite example of dvekes Hashem, and where you don't see it, that person who got killed, there's going to be one reason for it. He wasn't totally walking with Hashem. And who is responsible? The rabbis. Can't be that somebody in your community, anyone, is not close to Hashem, and therefore they need to get kapara to get back to being Israel. That's part one, and I got enough time to do part two. I have to go a little faster on part two. But so the next question we have to ask, if this is the fact, so how do you do it? What do you got to do to not disconnect from Hashem? It's all good and well. I said, okay, you got to say, so what do you do? What's the method? So to that, we go to an early part of the Parsha. Now we're going to have to go a bit quicker now. Earlier part of the Parsha, dealing with a Jewish king. In source number 18, I'm going to have to say a lot outside so we can finish on time. There's a special mitzvah that a king is given. It says when he sits on his throne of glory, it says, V'kosav lo es mishnah ha-Torah hazos. What does it say? When he sits on his throne, he shall write for himself two copies of this Torah in a book. A kohen writes two copies of the Torah. V'hoysa imo, it's with him, V'kara bo ko yimei chayav, he reads it all his life, L'man yilma, so that he'll learn, L'yiras Hashem alokecha, to fear Hashem, Lishmar is called Divrei Torah, so to keep all the Torah, Vesachukim, all these mitzvahs, lasosim, to do them. Okay. So the question is, why does he need two copies? Isn't one copy enough? So Rashi brings from Chazal in source 19, two scrolls. One that is what? Shtei Sifrei Torah. Acha Shehi Munachas Bebeis Ginazav. One that he keeps in his treasury, and one that's what? Va'acha shenichnasas v'yotzes simo, and one that goes in and out with him, wherever he goes. In other words, there's one that's in his personal treasure house, and one that's very small, it's like on his arm. It's with him at all times.
Applicatia.
Yeah, but it's a real Torah. It's not a, it's a real thing. So the question is, why does he need two? The Zohar gives us a fascinating statement that's difficult to understand. And the Zohar says like this. He says, there are two mitzvos with regards to the Torah. The first is, Vehegita yomam v'layla. You will toil in it day and night. The second one is what? That the Sefer Torah should go with the king wherever he goes. As it says, V'hoisimo v'korobo kol yimei chayav. Interesting. The Zohar is saying there are two aspects of Torah. There's two mitzvahs of Torah. One is learn Torah day and night. The other one is, and the king goes around with that other Torah. So it's a little hard to understand the Zohar. What is he saying? There's two mitzvahs of Torah. Well, there's one mitzvah that every Jew is supposed to write a Torah. Like, what happened to that one? And the second, because we says in Parshas Vayelech, it says everyone will write a Sefer Torah. Everyone has a mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah. And secondly, why does he skip what Rashi brings out from Chazal, that you put it in the treasury? Rambam says about the first Sefer, he puts it in the treasury. So the commentaries explain what the Zohar is trying to tell us is that these two things go hand in hand. And what the Zohar is saying, when he says, Vehigisa bayomam valayla, you will learn Torah day and night. You know what that means, learn Torah day and night? That is that Torah that Rashi brings down that was put in the treasury. And we'll explain what that means in a minute. And the second one, that he has to go with it in and out, he has to read it his whole life, that's the two parts of Torah, as we'll explain. Torah has two parts, for a king and for everybody. And we can refer to the Tanya very briefly, although it's a long citation. The Tanya in the fifth chapter explains the whole idea of learning Torah and the value of learning Torah. And really, we should read it inside. It's worthwhile. He says, now, when an intellect conceives and comprehends a concept with its 21, I'm sorry, with its intellectual faculties, when you really think good and hard about something using your brains, this intellect grasps the concept and encompasses it. The concept, you get enveloped by the concept. It's like you're mamish, you're one with the concept. When you really think of an idea and you get it, then you're totally, it's immersed in it. Now, that's in general. But this concept is in turn grasped, enveloped, and enclosed within that intellect which conceived and comprehended it. For example, when a person understands and comprehends fully and clearly any halacha in the Mishnah Gemara, his intellect grasps and encompasses it and at the same time is enclosed in it. When you learn a piece of Torah and you really not just learn it and you hear a piece of information in one ear out the other ear, but you really think about it, and you ask questions about it, and you try to understand it, and you chew it over, and you're mamish oisik in it, and you ask every possible question and try to understand what is going on. And now you've totally integrated, so it's mamish, it's a part of you. Now this is an incredible thing, because we're talking about Torah, which is Hashem's wisdom. And Hashem's wisdom can become part of you. And then he says after dot, 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 he says, since in the case of knowledge of the Torah is clothed in the soul and intellect of a person and is absorbed in them, it is called bread and food of the soul. Torah is called the bread, the food of the soul. Why? For just as physical bread nourishes the body as it is absorbed internally in his very inner self, where it is transformed into the blood and the flesh of the flesh of his flesh. Right? When you eat something, it goes totally, it gets totally into your bloodstream. Whereby he lives, and that costs you to live. So too it is with the knowledge of the Torah and its comprehension by the soul of the person who studies it well with a concentration of the intellect, until the Torah is absorbed by his intellect and is united with it, and they become one.
Beautiful.
This becomes nourishment for the soul. Your soul feasts on Torah. And it's inner life from the giver of life, the blessed Ein Sof, who's clothed in his wisdom and in his Torah that are absorbed in the soul. Remember, Hashem's Torah is Hashem. So that's like you're, it's almost like how you're eating Hashem in a certain way. That and that's life force is keeping in your neshama alive.
It's delicious.
And that's what he means. This is the meaning of the pasuk. Yes, your Torah is within my inward parts. He says, "V'torascha b'toch me'ai." So what's he saying? The Baal Tani is explaining what the Zohar is telling us. The first mitzvah of Torah is like Rashi brings down, "Shehu muneches bebeis kinazav." It is in the treasure house. Now, what do you know about a treasure house? Nobody sees it. It's locked away. That is the same idea of the when the Zohar brought down v'higisa b'yomla. You will toil in it day and night. You work hard to absorb the message of Torah till it gets mamish in your brain 100%. And once it's there and it's in the treasure house, it's part of you. It gives you life. And the only one who knows you got it is Hashem. It's not something to show off. You work hard in understanding. It doesn't have to be a Gemara. It could be concepts in Yiddishkeit, concepts in Amuna. To really work hard to understand or to understand the halacha. But it's not just getting information. It's like it becomes part of you. This is step one. However, the Klal Shegava Rebbe asked, wait a minute. It's very interesting. What would you call a treasure house? Should it be a base? Shouldn't it be called a base ginazo? His treasure house? Why is it a base ginazav in the plural? A house of treasures. Isn't it just one treasure, Torah? So he explains, based on a pasuk in Mishle that says, Kasvam aluach libecha, inscribe that on the tablet of your heart. He says, it's very important, the tachlis of this person's avodah is, yes, you got to think about the Torah that you're learning. But what has to happen to the Torah that you now have absorbed in your mind? It's not enough. V'yadata hayom, v'hashevosa alavavecha. You have to know it today and bring it into your heart. You have to be able to get the message, the information of the Torah has to get into your feelings. It has to be something you have an excitement for, a feeling for. It's not enough that you learn Torah in your brains and it stays in your brains. But what do you get excited about? Other things. It's got to get integrated into your... If you're studying with great analysis and with great fervor, it will now become part of who you are and it's going to be your emotional way of looking at life. Now, you got to remember, the Yetzer Hara, he has a different job. The Yetzer Hara says, well, you learned Torah, that's okay, that's over there. But in real life, you don't have to do it. His job is to create that disconnect. Your job is to keep it strong. How do you keep it strong? By working hard in understanding the message of the Torah. And now we don't, the Yetzer Hara wants to separate the mind from the heart, or the heart from the mind. Our job is to keep the heart and mind together. So therefore, what the Tzar is saying, and this is what the king is supposed to do. He's supposed to study the Torah in his treasure house. But it's called a plural, because there's two treasures. The Torah of the mind and the Torah in the heart. Those are the two treasures. And we know Melech, Mem Lamed Chaf, is the Notrikin, is the abbreviation for Mem stands for Moach, Lamed stands for Lev, Chaf stands for Klayot. And what's that? The Moach is the brains, the Lev is the heart, the Klayot are the kidneys, which is the source of the blood, which is the actions of the person. So really, what does Melech stand for? Thought, speech, action. That's what it is. In other words, the mind, the moach, the lev, the heart, and that's the order a person's supposed to live. You study the Torah and you get the Torah clear. When it's clear, then you get emotionally connected to it, and then when you have to decide what to do, it's clear what you're going to do. That's the way it's supposed to be. And that's what a real melech is. And that's not just a king, because every Jew, we're a mamleches kohanim. Every Jew has to be a melech in this way. And it's not just a mitzvah for a king. Every one of us has to have, as it were, two sifrei Torah. You have to have one sefer Torah, which is for the moach and the lev, for the brains and for the heart, and that's bebeiskin asav, that's hidden. Nobody knows what's going on in there. But then you have that second sefer Torah that you go out with. That you go out with. When you go out to the street, then you got to do actions. And what kind of actions are you going to do? Is it actions based on what your heart and mind are telling you? Or is it what other people are telling you? Now, you know what the opposite of melech is? You change the letters melech, the other way.
It's a lemech.
Well, that's good.
If you put the heart before the brain, it's a lemech.
But if you do the actions, and then the heart, and then the brains, it's kilem, to be destroyed. Okay. Kilem, you're destroyed. You're finished. And that's what the Yetzer Hara's job is to do. His job, and that's where it says, oh, I skipped the Medrash over here, 23. It says Hasayif HaSafer, the sword and the book came down from heaven, bound together. Hashem says, you observe what is written in this book, you will be spared from this sword. If you do not, you will be killed by this sword. What does it mean? That's what we've been saying. That Hashem says, listen, there's a sword and a sefer. The sefer is a sefer Torah. If you grab onto the sefer Torah and you learn what's in the sefer Torah and you get it into your mind, you get it into your heart, and it's a part of you, and that will determine what actions you do, then everything's going to be amazing. But if not, then it's the sword. What's the sword? That's the Yetzer Hara who cuts your head from your heart. Exactly. Exactly. That's the Egla Rufa. That's the whole point. Why is it? Why? How can it be that a Jew's walking the street and gets murdered like that? Well, we said that Hashem's Hashkacha is not over him now. Well, why is Hashem's Hashkacha not over him? Because he wasn't thinking about Hashem all the time. Well, why wasn't he thinking about Hashem all the time? Because the Torah wasn't absorbed in his brain and in his heart. If it's not absorbed in his brain and his heart, then he does whatever he does. Yeah, maybe I learned a little Torah, but did you really go for the whole thing? So we see from this second piece of the Melech, this is how you're able to stay close to Hashem. That's how you become a Yisrael. That you've got to learn the Torah with all your effort. And then you've got to take the message and say, okay, what does it mean? How do I feel about it? How do I change my feelings that they should reflect what the Torah is teaching? The Torah teaches you any concept. You learn Chesed. Okay, this Torah of Chesed. You're learning all about Chesed. But are you excited about it? Is this real to you? And oh, I'm so excited to be able to do Chesed now that I know how special Chesed is. And then when it comes time to do it, even people aren't so nice, you still want to do Chesed. Then you're a Melech. Then you're keeping your head and heart together. Right? What connects the head and the heart? The neck.
That's right.
The neck. It's the Sefer or the Sayef. It's the book or the sword. So if you got to keep the book, you're fine. But if not, it's the sword. And if it's the sword, that's where it separates it. And that's how we'll end in the Mishnah Novice says, when a person leaves this world, neither silver nor gold nor precious stones nor pearls are scored him, but only Torah study and good deeds. As it says, as you go forth, it will guide you. As you recline, it will protect you. And when you awake, it will speak on your behalf. Mm-hmm. As you go forth, it will guide you, refers to Olam Hazeh. As you roll over crying, it will protect you, refers to the grave, and when you wake, it will speak on your behalf to Olam Haba. The Torah itself speaks on your behalf.
Wow.
In other words, when you get into situations in life, the Torah itself tells you what to do. The Torah itself tells you what to do. You have to do what the right thing is. So now we've gone full circle. How do we make sure that we stay protected? How do we make sure that people are safe in our community? It's we have to give them so much Torah to be engaged in it. And it reaches into your heart that the actions are just going to fit right in. And we keep, as I said, the title of the class is Keep Your Head on Your Shoulders. If we're able to keep our head on our shoulders, it only comes if there's amelus in Torah. You're really working hard in Torah. Then you're always keeping Hashem close to you. they don't have to worry about anything that can happen. And that's the key to all the tshuva that we try to accomplish. Mr. Shemesh B'Zaycha, to all the brachas in this parsha.